On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
It is your buddy Robinson.
Here's to you, buddy Robinson.
Hey, aren't you that guy everybody hates?
No, man, no.
This is Tall Can Audio. Follow along on Twitter at Tall Can Audio or at facebook.com/tallcanaudio.
Just do it!
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into TCA number 781. Matt over here, Rob over there. We are on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. You can find all the archives at TallCanAudio.com. What are you saying today, man?
Living the Sunday dream, really, you know. It's
fake lunches, you know, and all.
Fake lunches and whatnot. It's cold as all get out.
Seriously.
But went out for a rip on the ODR today.
The what?
Which, yeah, the outdoor rink.
Oh, okay.
Come on, man.
Sorry, I'm not there with you and the cool kids.
Yeah, it's been said before. But yeah, and again, at minus 16 or 18 plus wind chill of minus 26, maybe not the best day, but it's in a lovely little sheltered area. So... not bad. And of course, the skill's not rusty at all.
Of course.
It's been a couple years in between out for a twirl and skates, you know, the ice condition. I'm going to blame it on the ice conditions,
yeah, obviously.
Really. But yeah, between that and yesterday, I took the dog out for about an hour and a half walk. And I'm just going to tell you, I got home and the left side of my face was just, because of course, everybody's out there with their big Gore-Tex parkas and.
It's a fun word.
Snow pants and shit, and I'm just, you know, I'm doing my regular thing. Got a
shorts,
ball cap, got a ball cap, yeah, got a ball cap on.
They see they're opening the canal this week, but don't come. That's essentially the messaging that's been coming out is, yeah, we're gonna do it, but you shouldn't come. You shouldn't.
Don't open it.
Yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not blaming you. I'm not.
This was my decision.
How,
yeah.
Yeah, I can understand how you would get that impression from my tone, but if you don't want people to come, don't open it. It's very simple.
Well, so maybe you're got your thumb on this more than I do. I don't like the thing. Seems to be that there is like a streak going. Like we always open it. So even though we've canceled Winterlude, we're still going to open the canal, and. The last I read was if you live near it, like a local park or whatever, you can use it, but you shouldn't come from a distance to use it, even from other parts
from
of town.
A distance. Yeah. Don't flock to it.
Right.
Right. They're saying there'll be no, you know, warming huts. There'll be no, you know, huts to change your skates. There'll be no beaver tails or other refreshments. So.
Oh, there'll be refreshments.
There'll be no fight. Yeah, exactly. me in a paper bag. That's what it's with the rest of the rummies. Right. That's what we got going on. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. And yeah, I'm sure they are looking to keep a, you know, a 50 year streak or whenever the NCC first opened it as a skateway, you know, in the '70s or late '60s. So I'm sure there's something to that. You may be onto something, Matt, as you quite normally, you know, often are.
Well, the kickback seems to be that this is a further, you know, act of war on the less fortunate or the poor, because if you live near the canal, like the houses near the canal are not cheap houses. The well-off will be able to use this local wonder, but everyone else is not supposed to do so. So I suppose you can stretch these things however you want to, but it does seem like a can of worms that didn't need to be opened if you had just bypassed it for a year. So
yeah, well, and anybody really it who gets crazy uptight about that is the same person who's, you know, handing out $800 fines for you know, people on the outdoor rinks and you know, whatnot. So you just, everybody needs to just dial it back a bit and understand,
man, I think people are frazzled, eh? Like on all sides, everybody's just spent and like has had enough.
Yeah. Just hold on, people. Just a little more. I get it. Right. We all want to sit and have our latte at the Starbucks. Right. And, you know, take our laptop.
I'll have my brown bag in there too.
Yeah. Okay. But this is it. Right. And so people just, everybody, it's we're almost there.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Yep.
Right. It's, you know, we are now in late January and it seems like this is the first dose of winter we've had.
Seriously.
Warmer weather is around the corner. Like, honest to God, it's light till 5:30 and change. I'm about 6 weeks away from opening the pool. Better weather is around the corner, and hopefully like that brings lower numbers and vaccination. So really, we've done this for 10 months now. Easy, everybody.
Yep.
Easy.
What are you drinking today?
I'm sipping a beverage from your neck of the woods, the Dirty Schwa.
Yes.
I'm having a Take a Break tropical IPA from All or Nothing.
Okay, Brewery. Yeah.
So I've cracked this bad boy, and it comes in at a not so easy drink in 6.8. It does not taste like that, though. It's juicy.
They're not taking it easy.
Yeah, it's juicy, but I'm not getting a whole bunch of hoppiness from it. A little bit, and strangely smooth, I think, is for an IPA at 6.8. It tastes fairly smooth. I got a couple of them here because, you know, Matt, the things I do for you, I'm having this beer on a Sunday. But I have been for the rest of the time observing dryuary.
Uh-huh. We've been getting plenty of feedback on that fucking guy. I knew it, right?
Yeah, all right. I knew it. You knew it. I made one Sunday. So other than that, but through the week, you know, you come home and you're just like, I'd like to have a beer. Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to sit down and have a big sesh. I just want to have a beer, but I have not.
Okay. Right?
I have also abstained from desserts or any kind of, so just the show, Matt, I've held the line and it's fantastic.
All right. Well, I started out January. Better. Go ahead.
No, I'm feeling better than ever is what I'm saying.
I started out January with the, just going to have some only on show days. And then I found myself wanting to do more shows. And then.
Yeah. It's got nothing to do with content, listener. It has everything to do with Matt wanting a beer.
Yeah, is there anything we could talk about right now as I'm looking in the fridge, right? Like, but then I just gave up on it. Fuck it.
Who can I call? Who wants to talk and we can turn this into content of some variety?
I'm drinking Yep.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Matt, what are you drinking over there?
This is something I know you've had in the studio many times. In fact, this might be one of yours. I'm not sure. It's sitting in the... been sitting in the fridge for a while as I put it off. This is the full-time IPA from the Bose All Natural Brewing out in Van Cleek Hill.
Yes.
So I'm not onto too much of the Bose stuff all that often. When they put out something new, I usually try it, but it's not one that I circle back to too often. But the full-time IPA, it's sort of similar maybe to what you were talking about in that it's not a particularly strong IPA, right? Like there's not a ton there, but it's nice. It's all right. It's doing the job on a Sunday afternoon.
So did you get it out of the door of the fridge in the green room?
That filing system has been out the door for months. So.
Well, I haven't been, I've been there once in the last 10 months, right?
Yeah.
So I can't really expect you to
withhold
a portion of the fridge
right.
solely for my beverage needs.
No, it's although, chaos in there now.
Hey, listen, now you can get to your stuff in just 1 second.
Uh-huh.
So doing a little cooking as I normally do on the weekend, making a clam chowder, one of my go-tos.
Shout out.
Chowder. Yep. In this time of year, I love a good chowder. So again, rolling through tunes, and so I know you and I both have, we both love live music, obviously, right? And in this time where there's this absence of being able to,
yes, I might.
What is this live music you speak of? So yeah, I've been running through a bunch of live concerts while I kick around. And I know you like to listen to live sets as well while kicking around the house. You got a couple go-tos? What's your go-to? Give me a couple.
A few months ago, I guess it would have been around Thanksgiving. There's a band that I've kind of gotten into over the last couple of years called the Menzingers, and they did a live from an empty concert hall Saturday night, and it was a really cool thing. Like it wasn't like some of these bands, and it was fun. At the beginning, all these bands were doing like Instagram live and shit like that just to reach out to their fans and stuff to kill some time. But it sounds like shit, right? It sounds like it's coming through a cell phone microphone, which it is. This was fully produced, like it comes through your surround sound system and it sounds excellent. So I've replayed that one a bunch of times. You know, I've got a couple of Gaslight Anthem ones from over in Europe that I like to check out now and then. The Hip, That Night in Toronto, I like going back and watching that one. I don't know, there's Iron Maiden live at Ulevi we used to throw on all the time before recording or just any random beer piling night.
Yeah.
Those are a few off the top of the head.
Yeah, see, to me, the live at Ulevi, that is even, well, and again, so for you non-initiated Iron Maiden fans, 80s dirt metal, that concert covers the first four albums. So to me, it's the golden era of Iron Maiden. And I love that. That's an absolute go-to as well.
Right.
It's funny you bring up the Gaslight. Just the other day, I was listening to Gaslight live at the Southside Festival 2013. So I think that's in Germany. Am I right with that?
Yeah, I believe so.
It's got if the first hour is rock solid. Like there is not a bad tune in that first hour. I usually lose interest after that because I'm not quite as big a Gaslight guy as you are. But but that first, including the Bonzo Goes to Bitburg, the remote cover, that's an awesome cover. I may like it better than the Ramones version.
There's also another one by MXPX, a cover of the same song that I also may like better than the original. So the Ramones may be in third place for Bonzo Goes to Bitburg.
And it's funny because I like to listen to the Chili Peppers live at Slane Castle in Dublin. Nice, they do a version of Havana Affair,
okay,
which is also a Ramones tune. Mm-hmm. And I like the Chili Peppers version better.
Ramones are just writers. They just put it out in the world. Let other bands take it and run with it.
Yeah, clearly artists, those guys. But it's funny because he says, Anthony Kiedis says, the next song is a song by the Ramones. You know, you may not recognize it as a Ramones song. He said, unless you've had enough Guinness, it'll sound exactly like the Ramones. So, yeah, it's funny. You've touched on a couple of them. I love to a go-to, and I was listening to it the other day, too. I love the Queens of the Stone Age, Chicago Lollapalooza Stop 2013.
Mm. Yep.
That is an awesome listen for anybody who's out there, right? I also love it's U2, also from Slane Castle, maybe 03. It's the end of their Elevation tour. But
probably one tour too late for me.
yeah, but to me, they cover everything, right, in it, and it's an awesome listen as well. So, yeah, I just thought as I was going through it, I'm like, yeah, I'm wondering what you got. One other thing musically before we move on, I'm cruising to the dog walk yesterday actually, and I know you have this, you've been loving whether it's Scotiabank who covers the Ahead by a Century. Right? You're loving that. Am I right?
Yeah. That's got to go. That's
the single biggest piece of hip cover shit that you've ever come across.
It's brutal.
Okay. So we're driving to the place where we walk the dog and I hear this cover of Grace 2.
Yeah.
And you don't, have you heard that?
I think so. Oh, maybe not then. Maybe not. No.
So it's Twin Flame is the name of the band, and they do a cover of Grace 2. And so I'm like, and really it's hard to do a cover of a hip song because Gord is...
The voice is so much a part of it.
And he's so unique, yep, right? Like, yep, everything he brings to it is...
He wrote that for his voice, right? And his approach. And it's hard to, for anyone else to take that. And
so you got to know... I don't like too many liberties taken with songs I love when you do a cover. Sometimes I just like to hear you pay homage to the original, sure, and you do as good as you can. Like the Arkells do a version of Music at Work at the House of Strombo.
The Japandroids, not long after Gord passed, did a cover at a concert they were doing of Nautical Disaster, which they tried their best to stay true to the pacing and stuff that the Hip laid down, but it's still clearly with the way their instruments are tuned and that guy's voice, it's pretty sweet. If you haven't had a chance, you can check that one out on YouTube too. But
so this Twin Flames version is similar but just different enough. It's a female singer, mm-hmm, and so Twin Flames are an Ottawa band,
okay,
and they are indigenous in origin. And so some of the background has native singing, like you'd hear around a drum circle or whatever. Hmm. It's actually interesting, and I think it does the song justice. It's, yeah, you've tried to stay true, but you know you can't do the Gord thing. You bring in the indigenous singers in behind in the chorus. It's yep, kind of cool. It's worth a check out. It may not be your bag, but... not bad.
Well, here you go, listeners. If my evening goes as I plan for it to go, we will get out of here on that. If you hear one of our normal outros, you'll know I just didn't feel like it. The leaf blew a lead or something like that. But we'll post a link in the show notes. So either way, we'll help you find it. So.
There you go. There you go.
On this day in 2017, the Senators make a huge trade. It's not actually huge. Would you like to take us? Does anything jump to your mind January 2017 of an acquisition?
January 27. It's an acquisition, not a jettison. We're not right, moving somebody away.
It's small pieces in, small pieces out. The piece coming in would be more well known than the piece leaving.
Okay. So the piece coming at 27, the piece coming in is Burroughs.
No.
No.
But right vein.
Is it Jyrki Jokapaka?
It is. Tommy Wingles.
I love Tommy Wingles. That's one of those things when you look at that 2017 playoff run, the Pageau 4-goal game against the Rangers, he's on a 2-0, and it's with Tommy Wingles. And you're like,
just keep it. Oh,
I love that guy. Yeah. Well, you got 3 goals already tonight. You keep it.
The Zingle Wingles year.
Over here.
Do you remember the
Mr. Wingles
beloved Senator prospect, basically, that was shipped out for Tommy Wingles? Beloved, yeah, mostly in this studio.
Yeah, and he went over to, it's, so he went to, he went to San Jose?
Yep.
No, actually, now I was thinking Jonathan Dahlin, but he went to Vancouver for Burroughs, yep, right? It's all in that sort of, no, I can't think of who it was.
It is your buddy Robinson.
Here's to you, Buddy Robinson.
With Zach Stortini and a 7th, I believe.
Stortini.
Who I forgot was a Senator.
We barely got to know you, Zach Stortini.
Speaking of notable NHL trades, one made over the weekend, perhaps a little bigger than that one. Pierre-Luc Dubois and a 3rd, I believe it was,
yep,
sent to Winnipeg for Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic. Interesting in that both guys had requested a trade, seemingly both looking for bigger stages, and both end up not on bigger stages, just on different stages.
And really two of the smaller stages that you could possibly find.
Both guys, though, do, according to the PR teams out there, seem to be fine with the deal. Jack Roslovic actually from Columbus, so that's interesting for him. Why don't we, you know, we can come at this from a few different angles, but what was your first blush take when you saw that was the deal?
Well, first of all, how dare you denigrate the Tommy Wingle trade. Right.
I believe we call it the Buddy Robinson trade.
that this would be bigger in some way seems borderline ridiculous and disrespectful. Anyways, moving forward, once the dust clears on this, it's like the most obvious conclusion that's sort of been kicked around forever. You go, I got a problem.
Yep.
You got a problem. We got two guys drafted, 2 and 3 in the same draft, same vintage.
Yep.
You know, they may not bring the same things, but I'll take your problem if you take my problem and 26% of the salary.
Yes.
What? And 26, odd, right? It not 25, not 30.
I think it brought it even with Dubois' number.
Sure. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Right?
But you're right. It's
And it's interesting to look around, right? And I last night I spent a pile of time reading different things, whether it be, you know, The Athletic had oodles of coverage, right? In terms of, and it's really, depending on who you talk to, some people love it from the Winnipeg side. Some people love it from the Columbus side, right? It's, and there's not a lot of people, I think, who feel meh about it.
I might.
Would you agree?
I agree with you. I agree with you. That seems to be, especially in those fan bases, you obviously think you scorched the other team, right? And but
right,
this is interesting only in the and I wish I could credit whoever it was, but I can't, so I won't. They put out the Winnipeg Jets have finally gone out and got the center they've needed to play with Patrick Laine, and all they needed to give up was Patrick Laine.
Yes.
I guess the Stastny Whisperer wasn't enough. I do like it. For Winnipeg, I think in the division, certainly, but maybe across the league, there may not now be a deeper team in the middle, right? At least down the middle. I don't.
Edmonton fans are pitching shit at whatever.
This is the thing I was going to say. Even in our division, I don't think Scheifele and Dubois stacks up with Draisaitl and McDavid, or frankly, Matthews and Tavares. But I think when you add that third level, the depth is better than either Turris or whoever Toronto's got, the Kerfoot, right? Whatever's going to happen there tonight.
Right. Okay, but you're talking about Stastny as the third?
Yep.
And depending on who you listen to, they're saying, yeah, Stastny's bumping up to the wing, and you'll see Lowry in that three hole.
Well, and he has been there, and if that's the case, then obviously I withdraw my whatever, but if they were to choose to keep running them down the middle, then I would like theirs better. But if you're just going top two for top two, I still don't think they passed Edmonton or Toronto with this deal. But they're certainly better in the middle. Yeah.
Where do you, to me, it comes down to where do you stand as somebody who had a front row seat, you know, Matt with popcorn in his lap and in his beard, perhaps watching Columbus
with a hole in the bottom of it, even though I'm the only one home
watching Columbus beat the Leafs in the play-in round last year. Is that
there was no popcorn, straight Bacardi. That was it.
Yeah. Yes. Is that the PLD that Winnipeg is getting or somewhere behind that? Like, what do you believe Pierre-Luc Dubois is? Because some people will tell you legit star number one, and others will have you believe lower tier first line center, maybe best off as a number two. What do you think you're getting?
I don't think you're getting star number one. I don't think he's top 10, 15 center in the league. On some teams, I think he could be a number one like he was in Columbus. I think he fits behind Scheifele in Winnipeg. He was great against Toronto, but I think this idea that he was every bit the stifling shutdown center is a little overrated. Columbus had that in spades, and we had tons of trouble with it, and he was the guy who drove play the other way. He has, if you look at some of his underlying numbers, some not insignificant defensive flaws. Now, he's not like brutal in his own end, but he's not a two-way, you know, the next Bergeron or something like that, in my opinion. So he was great against Toronto, and if he's that from now on going forward, like now he's interested, then Winnipeg's getting a great player. But I don't think you know, he's a top 15 guy in the league, in my opinion.
No, and I agree with you. I agree with you all the way. Yeah. And really it comes down to, man, you have, and did you read the article in The Athletic? It was sort of, it was a combo effort between Pronman, Lishishin, and I can't remember who the third person was, Custance.
I saw it. I didn't have a chance to check it out.
Okay. It was fairly lengthy, right? And they looked at it from both sides. Mm-hmm. And clearly, is Dom Lishishin, is he out of Winnipeg?
I have no idea where he's based.
Okay. For some reason, I went, Dom Lishishin sounds Polish, Ukrainian. Yeah, it sounds like he's probably from Winnipeg. He is down on line A, right?
Okay, and yeah.
So quite often what I find is, I find whatever Dom Lishishin's saying, I find I kind of go in the opposite direction, or I'm coming from the opposite direction. How about that?
Yep.
I'm not using Dom as a, I'm going to go in this direction.
Right.
I like his stuff. To me, he's got really good stuff. So I'm not dissing him, but
that's because I find Dom hurts my feelings a lot. Like, Dom's hard to agree with, cause he's like, hey, you know that team you love? Here's all the reasons they suck. Like, fuck you, Dom. Yeah. Right. Like,
okay. Well, then maybe Dom needs to find somebody that he loves. Cause to me, that a bit of a hater than Dom. Cause I don't see, although he loves PLD in this exchange, right? He's negative. Now he's an analytics guy, right? He's a deep dive guy. Yeah. Right. And so you can always bring those numbers and say, man, Line A is a defensive, not just liability, but like a black hole.
Yeah.
Right. And so that seems to be the takeaway on this. Right. And so, but I look at what he does and you look at the amount of goals that he's scored since in the league, he's in a very elite class in the NHL. Like, he's up there with Matthews, Ovechkin, Kane. Like, these are the names of goals scored since Line A's intro to the league. And so what point do you go ahead.
No, carry on.
I just, at what point do you go, right? He's 21 or 22, right, and he's a bit of a defensive liability, or a lot of a defensive liability. Yes. But at what point do you go, but dude's a killer?
Yeah,
he
I guess
the puck in the net.
Yeah, it depends on what
even
you.
Even when he's not super motivated.
Yeah, one of the things, I guess, it depends on what your team needs, right? And I think Line A will be better sheltered in Columbus, but he is not a great 5-on-5 play driver. He is a defensive liability, but he shoots like nobody's business, and he can put the puck in the net if you can find other guys to shelter him, which I think Columbus can, and somebody to get him the puck. I guess that's going to be Max Domi. I don't think Tortorella is going to love that combination defensively. Whereas Pierre-Luc Dubois can drive play 5-on-5. He does have a slightly above average kind of finishing rate, and he is a good shooter. Like I said, his defense isn't as good as maybe being in Columbus made it look, but he brings a lot of other things that can drive a line on his own. So those are kind of the differences. You need guys who can score goals, and Line A is just going to have to ride with someone else who can drive the play and get him where he needs to be. And as long as you're okay with that, then you can be perfectly happy with Patrick Line A, and we'll see whether or not he's going to be willing to re-up there long-term, because I think he's only got 1 year left on his deal before he's in RFA again.
Yeah, it's controllable. I think they have another 4 years, 3 years of controllable time after this.
Okay.
Likewise with Dubois, there's two. So one after this, and then two more controllable years after that. So they should both be the same, I believe.
Yeah.
Right? Same draft, same. And they bring interesting, it's in this day and age, nothing just comes down to stats, right? You go, and stats are, you know, that whole stats are for losers thing. Like, people saying, well, if you look at their last two years, you know, combined, Dubois has got better stats over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other hand, they go, yeah, but last year, Line A has better stats than Dubois.
Right.
And you go, yeah, all right. So how big do you want to make that period, right?
Sure.
And I choose to make it a 4 year period.
Okay.
Crank that bad boy right over.
Then he's a 40 goal scorer. And Line A was, right?
And
in his first year.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so I just think when you look at that stint of, like, that video the other day, that ISO cam on Pierre-Luc Dubois,
yeah,
just mailing it in.
His final shift as a Blue Jacket.
That's a damning video. Yeah, and you look at that and go, yeah, I get it, right? He's and I listened to you and Michaela last Friday morning, and you were talking about, you know, the whole Babcock thing and his treatment of Franzen and all these things, right? And how that's all swirling around. And then you look at Torts, right? And you can show all the videos you want of him just in Dubois's ear, right? Yeah. Just crawling in the jersey with him, giving it to him, right? And there's all of us who have this, you know, I love old school hockey and or I all these things. But I think in this day and age, man, I'm not sure the Torts thing flies anymore either.
I think he buried his GM by doing what he did. And you can look at that, the video of Dubois, and he wasn't trying hard enough. Now, that was one isolated shift. He hadn't been playing good all season, but he does bust his ass all the way up there. He doesn't get the pass, and then he goes to make a play on the corner or go into the and he just doesn't. Like, he doesn't compete, doesn't do it. He looks terrible. But if you think the offers that Jarmo Kekalainen got better after you publicly made it clear, I'm done with this, I'm not going to play this guy anymore, you know, you screwed your GM. So I think, yeah, I don't think Torts did his team any favors there at all. And
can I contrast that with, and in reading a bunch of stuff, the idea that Laine rolls into camp, and he answers all the media, and he just says, I'm here, aren't I? Yeah. I'm here, aren't I? And then he rolls out against Calgary in the season opener, puts in two goals, gets into a, air quotes, fight, and then Winnipeg shelves him. And some people out there saying, yeah, his trade value is never going to get higher than that. I have some things, some stuff on the back burner. I'm going to shelve that guy. The different, as you say, the lessening of the value of Pierre-Luc Dubois versus, hey, look at that. Look at this.
Yes.
Bam. Guy is engaged, ready to go. Those two different scenarios. And you go, yeah, but they're maybe both malcontents. And we're just doing a screen grab of Laine's. Bam. And you go, shelve him.
You think that's what happened?
Any thoughts on that?
You don't think Laine's hurt?
I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm not saying that is what happened. I'm merely putting it in.
Yeah, okay. And it's interesting. And it could be. And you're right. Like, these are miniature grabs of very small moments in time for two players that we already know, you know, are very good players. And you've maybe caught one at his worst and one at his best, and it was his time for a change. So, to me, that is an interesting thought or conspiracy theory or however you want to view that.
Hey man, call it what you want.
Yeah, no, I like it. I do. I think it's interesting. The one other point that I saw out there a little bit was Dubois and kind of the shit he was taking for not trying. And I think that's legit. But if you want to look at the other side of it, how often, like you're suggesting, and like has happened 100 other times, if you know you're about to trade a guy, you don't keep running him out there to get hurt. You do sit him, right? If you think he's about to move. If Dubois thinks he's about to get moved, why does he want to lessen his trade value by possibly getting hurt? Or, you know, if it's okay for the team to just sit me down until they're ready to move me for their benefit, well, maybe I'd like to sit me down for my benefit until you're ready to move me. And I know we don't give players that benefit of the doubt, and it's really because you screw over your teammates, right? If you're not out there contributing and whatever. But maybe he just goes, yeah, you know what? I don't like the urgency that you've put on this. I'd like you to move me a little faster. And so here I am. This is what I'm prepared to give you right now.
Yeah. And it's you've brought up an interesting thing there, because you wonder, right, before Dubois was traded, there's all this talk of, has Torts run its course, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why trade away a legit number one center to keep a coach for who's going to run his shelf life is going to expire in a year or two anyways. So you go, where are you with, you know, where are the rest of the Blue Jackets on this? Right. Mm-hmm. And either Jarmo Kekalainen is super tone deaf and the rest of the Blue Jackets are like, fuck Torts. That's it, man. We're done. You know, or he's just saying, yeah, no, the rest of the team thinks that Dubois and his Matador act right? Ole! Away you go, man, right through to the net, right? Is bullshit and they don't like his compete level, then to me that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I think due to Kekalainen's actions, we are only left to assume that the rest of the Blue Jackets are not happy with Dubois' actions.
Or something else. Maybe his personality. Because one of the other rumors running around is that Columbus room is a fairly make America great again room. And maybe Pierre-Luc Dubois is not. And so maybe there's some personality clashes happening in that room. Again, speculation. But maybe it just wasn't a good fit. Maybe it just wasn't a good match. But even as you've suggested, you know, if you're siding with the coach here, that coach does not he's a lame duck coach right now. Tortorella does not have a contract past the end of this year. So you better hope it wasn't to side with him if you're not married to him yet.
Right. But in reading some stuff out of Columbus, there's some feelings that he will retire at the end of this year.
Torts?
That he isn't in. Yeah. That Torts isn't in fact looking for more. Okay. Right. And that this may be the end of his career. And so it was interesting. You saw on Hockey Night in Canada, I'm sure Saturday night.
Where you aren't on Hockey Night in Canada. I don't watch Hockey Night in Canada.
Oh, it's true, man. Sorry about that. Canada's team, the Habs, were on in the primetime game. And Line A saying, you know, it's nice. I know some guys over there. There's a couple of Finns over there, including the GM. And so I think that's a good starting spot for Line A. Mm-hmm. If you look at Dubois, his parents live there. His dad works for the Moose.
Yep.
Right. And so I think initially on the surface, you go, yeah, right. It's a bit of a work, but at the end of the day, they can talk about number one centers never coming on the market. Jason Spezza. Or you can look at the idea that elite goal scorers are hard to acquire as well.
Yep.
Phil Kessel. And so you sort of go, I don't know, man. There's a lot of talk from a lot of different people. And at the end of the day, two clubs have swap problems, and now they have their own problems in terms of $7.5 to $9 million are what both these guys are going to want in a year or 6 months. So yeah. Now your problems are fresh and new. You can start new with a new personality.
I do. I will say before we move off this, I like it. I do for both teams. I think let's see, right? Like you both, like you said, to start this, I got a problem. You got a problem. This seems like a pretty natural fit here to swap them. I think there's a possibility these both work really well.
Yeah. And my only caveat to that is that Line A is a guy, he go, I don't know how he's gonna fit with Torts.
Oh, Torts is gonna hate
him for the rest of this.
Line A better hope Torts is retiring.
Yeah, and Torts' answer to it was, he's like, yeah, it's hard not to watch Line A, and you see his exuberance and his passion. I love his passion. He must have said passion three times. Right. Right about Line A, and the idea that PLD is now going to to Winnipeg, and you go, yeah, that's a great fit. And you go, Shifley, you know, Dubois, whether it's Lowry, whatever you got going down the middle, Stastny and then Lowry, whatever your deal is, after seeing Winnipeg for the last three games, mm-hmm. their defense is shit, and yep. they're not going anywhere. They can be as good up front as they can, but they have guys entering the zone. And I've seen Ottawa with its pop gun offense rolling in across the blue line. And if Hellebuck is not fantastic, or Brossoit for that matter, they're not winning games. And against the heavyweights in this division, or the elites of the Canadian division, yeah, Winnipeg's not making the playoffs. They may be sitting in a playoff spot right now, but when they start playing legit teams with that defense, when your most dynamic defenseman is Morrissey, who I like.
Yep.
But he's a 2-3 on a cup winning team.
No, I think you're right there.
Thanks. All right, then we're good to move then.
as we do, the top four in that draft, Austin Matthews, superstar in Toronto. Number two, Patrick Laine is requested to trade. Number three, Pierre-Luc Dubois is requested to trade. And number four, Jesse Puljujärvi has requested a trade. As we move on, it was a rough week.
Who is this Jesse Puljujärvi guy. Does he still play in the league, or is he still over there?
He's back, baby.
Yeah,
and looking all right. Sure, actually, he's. Why don't we talk a little about Hank Aaron, who passed away this week? One of, if not the greatest hitter in baseball history, got a ton of attention, and rightfully so, because he played in. It wasn't just his baseball ability. He went through some shit, right? And this was still a very racially charged era when he started. Made the number of presidents that he played through, someone listed, was pretty incredible. From Eisenhower to Ford, I believe. 21 straight years an all-star. And if you removed his 755 career home runs, he still would have more hits than Wade Boggs, who we all agree is a legend. So Hank Aaron, obviously somebody who played long before you and I were watching baseball, but one of those names that you just know is a legend.
First of all, yeah, in seeing some of the footage, I'm looking at those Brave jerseys from the 70s, the blue and white Brave jerseys, and they have those that helmet that is a navy blue with the white sort of triangle in the front that look very similar to Blue Jays batting helmets, right?
Yeah, it's true.
And I'm seeing him coming up to bat to hit his record-breaking home run, and I'm like, is he wearing a Jays jersey? I don't remember Hank Aaron ever playing for him. But anyways, that is, as you suggest, yeah, really before my time, late 70s. I know Matt likes to, age me on this show, but
Rob was in Nam at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Tunnel rat, really, in Nam. That's it's easy when you're six.
Sure.
But the thing that I have forever overlooked in terms of Hank Aaron, home run king, is, and you've touched on it, just what a prolific hitter he was, period. Right? Like a 21 time from 55 to 75 all-star games every year, right? Like that is legit, right? In terms of, and not just hitting for power, a 300 hitter, right?
Yep.
Driving in runs. Like he was a complete ball player, could field the position. And I think those things are overlooked as this home run king mantle, gets placed on him. And it's funny because I was watching the highlights of his. There was a nice little, sort of highlight pack and a bit of a bio bit on him Saturday morning of last week. And ESPN did a fantastic job, in my opinion. And I'm watching it with a 12-year-old. And it's the concept of exposing to a 12-year-old that in 54, when or 53 when Aaron was signed, that he was playing in the Negro Leagues and had to get bought for $10,000 by the Braves, playing in the minor league system on one of the first non-segregated baseball teams in the Deep South. And you go, what does non-segregated mean? And what it really means in Henry Aaron's case is you're playing on the same ball team as white guys.
Yeah.
But you can't change in the change room with them. You can't stay with them in the hotels.
A good number of them hate
you're
you.
You're just essentially on a white guy's ball team.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and the one guy saying that the manager would say to him, wouldn't even address him. He'd say to him, hey, blankety blank, you're up or on, or wouldn't even refer to him by his name. And you go, these are the kinds of things in our parents, maybe not your parents, our parents' lifetimes, right? These are the kinds of things that these people had to combat. And you go, oh, that's like 100 years ago. Yeah. No, not so much.
No,
really. And the idea that Hank Aaron in 78 or 79, when he broke Babe Ruth's record, received a shit ton of hate mail slash death threats.
Yep.
If you break Babe's record, I will kill you, black man. And you go, wow. It's so scary, really, to think that's in my lifetime. I know it's not in yours.
Well, and still just come out and dominate like that, right? Like with that in your back pocket or on your mind all the time, and still not just be a player, but be the best player in the world while that many people are against you and while you're fighting against so much systematic bullshit, and to just keep going and keep going and keep going. And there was some great stuff out there this week when they talked about, you know, his approach and some of the quotes they issued. And one of them was, I went up for every at bat looking for the breaking ball because I knew they couldn't get the fastball by me. Like, I knew I had that. So I'm looking for your shit and I'll crush it. Like, was essentially what he, and the quote that went kind of alongside with it was, trying to sneak a fastball by Henry Aaron was like trying to sneak a sunrise past a rooster. Like, no chance, buddy. Like,
that's, look at that. That's a rural guy right there.
For sure.
And the one guy going, you couldn't get a fastball by him. He'd hit it right out of the catcher's mitt. Like, it was. And you're like, really?
Yeah.
Like, and so, yeah, the idea that just what a prolific hitter he was. And it's funny because we talked, I think on last week's show, we talked about Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali. And
yep.
And so what a place Howard Cosell has in American sports history. It's the clip is of him breaking the record and Cosell saying, you know, Hank Aaron is getting a standing ovation in the deep South.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, but it's 78 or 79 Howard.
It
like,
doesn't fucking matter. Like
it's enough for him to mention it. Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, man, it's we've come a long way and we have so much further to go, really is the deal there.
The best hitter of all time. And what most people will tell you, still the home run king. So, you mentioned Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali. There was another fight on Saturday night. Conor McGregor, who always a draw, hasn't fought in almost a year. And that's kind of been a thing that maybe we can get into here. He loses to Dustin Poirier in their second encounter earlier on. I guess it'd be like 4 years ago now. McGregor defeated
Poirier. 7 years ago.
Yeah, okay, there you go. It was the other way around. Dustin Poirier has turned himself into a well-rounded fighter. He has been an interim champ. He has fought for the title before. While Conor's been out doing other things, Poirier's turned himself into a contender and a guy who matters. And early on in that fight, Conor was the aggressor. He comes out in that main event, and he's backing Poirier down. He just keeps moving forward, and he keeps moving forward. And he landed some okay shots. But as that's happening, Poirier is just burying these calf kicks in there. And through the first round, you can see that McGregor's not really checking them. He's just kind of letting it happen and coming forward. And you can see already in the second round, it's taking its toll. And you can see on the shots, it's knotted up. He can hardly put any weight on it. And Poirier lands one more, and you can see where it goes to. Conor has literally become, you know, that old expression, a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. And now that he can't move around on that leg, Poirier starts coming in with the boxing, hits him a couple of times with the left, and then finishes him with this right jab that was, it was an impressive game plan. It was a hell of a strategy that clearly, and Poirier said repeatedly after the fight, that's my coach. Like, he told me, this is what we're going to do. Trust the leg kick. It's going to work. It's going to be there. It'll set up where you need to go later in the fight. And everyone assumed it wouldn't necessarily be like this, but Poirier needed to drag Conor, who hasn't fought in a year, into the deep water, right? 3, 4, 5 rounds and make him swim out in the deep water. And it didn't even take that long for Poirier to get through him. I know you saw the highlights. What do you think of the finish?
Well, see, and the thing is, if nothing else, Poirier's got the big gas tank.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Right? And as you say, he's going to put it on you, right? It's going to be a volume, yep, an output of strikes and action where he's going to – and he's best driving forward, right? That is what Poirier does best. Mm-hmm. And for anybody out there who is the hardcore sports fan, and clearly if you're listening to this podcast, that's you, right, is – in the mindset of an athlete, and whether you've played little league or you've played, you know, hockey as a youngster and worked your way up into any level of competitive sports, combat sports is a unique beast unto itself, right? I don't count fighting out on George Street in Peterborough as legit combat sport, but what we are talking about is,
no matter how many times he tried to sell it to the OPP that way.
That's exactly. Out in front of a submarine having a go at it. It is the mindset of somebody who got destroyed like Dustin Poirier did in that 2014 fight with McGregor, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was a first round beatdown.
Yep.
And so it doesn't matter if you fought a pile of guys in the last 6+ years, which Poirier has done,
yep,
including the best of the best in this division. And so the idea that I've now arrived here 6+ years later and I am going to face this guy who gave me an absolute beatdown, mm-hmm, the mindset is hard to overcome, right? It doesn't matter the miles and the achievements since then. You always have that little chained baby elephant thing, which is, man, this guy fucked me up last time.
Yeah.
Last time I looked across at him, right? And so the faith that Dustin Poirier has to have in himself to trust what his coaches are saying, and the even bigger deal is to trust himself,
right?
Right, as an athlete, and execute that game plan. Mwah! Chef's kiss, beauty, right? In terms of what he did there, and so that is one of those things where you go, the fact that Connor was able to get up from the takedown, mm-hmm, and you go, okay, look at that, right? Connor's a striker. He's always been a striker. He's now gone off and become a pseudo boxer and done these things. And a striker, a fierce striker. I think he's a fierce striker at 145. I'm not sure he's a fierce striker at 155.
I agree with that.
And I think if they do a trilogy fight, which is what you're hearing all, you know, Dana White is saying, you know, with dollar signs rolling back in his head like a slot machine, money, 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 because Conor McGregor still is money.
Yep.
That you are talking about, this fight is going to end, in my opinion, the same way. It may not get, with Poirier winning is really what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's on the table, right? Because the title situation is confusing right now, too. There was some talk before the fight that maybe Khabib already could be talked out of it. He was emotional when he retired. He had just lost his father. He had fought injured, and he says he's retired. And Dana comes out before the fight on this week and says he hasn't totally closed the door. Let's see what happens, because there's two huge fights in that division. So he wants to see what happens between Connor and Poirier, because Khabib's no idiot. A rematch with Connor is money, right? He can make some dollars there too if he does decide to come out of retirement. But also the Dan Hooker and Michael Chandler fight that, you know, for a long time, Michael Chandler, and that was the co-main event in the same division, has been seen as the best lightweight outside of the UFC. So let's see what that looks like. And Dan Hooker is a top five, top seven kind of guy. And
he's legit.
For sure. So let's see how this card shakes loose, who fits where, who beats who. And I think Khabib probably could have been talked into it for a rematch with Connor for the title. But once Connor loses, it's not as financially relevant. And so he's probably done. They send the belt back because he's not going to hold that up. So now Poirier has to be in the undisputed title fight. But against who? It might be Gaethje, but he's the guy who just lost to Khabib. So do you give him another title shot right away? He would be the most exciting option. Are you ready to give it to Michael Chandler after one fight in the UFC, even though he was, you know, he won in a supreme fashion? You're certainly not going to do the trilogy, I don't think, right away. Like, I don't think Connor is the guy in that fight again. Although I do think the trilogy is coming eventually. It's really interesting now. Who else fits into that mix, and what's going to happen there?
Well, first of all, you got to go with, to me, you put Chandler against Gaethje.
Yeah.
That's the Gaethje coming off of an awful loss, right?
Yep.
And I think you do the trilogy, because to me, you put Poirier up against anybody else, and if he doesn't win,
now it's even messier.
That damages your trilogy fight, right?
Yep.
So to me, you let Chandler swim into deeper waters, right, with another guy who engages you, who is a goer, right?
Oh yeah.
Who is high volume, right? And you go, all right, well, let's see what happens there. And then you have that fight, you have the trilogy fight, then you do the, but yeah, in terms of a belt, you can, I don't know, man, you gotta wait. You gotta wait, I think.
Looks like it was an interesting card.
Well, and if you look at the undercard, was everything was decision except for one fight, and then I didn't watch the main card, but again, checking into it, following it, everything was a decision except for one.
And yeah.
You go, Jessica, damn, that's the
that was great. Jessica I versus Joanne Calderwood, and I was looking forward to that fight because it had that vibe of like Joanne Calderwood's this kind of soft spoken, like that kind of cute, like. She just doesn't seem all that threatening, whereas Jessica I is a bully, and she's happy to talk that way, and she likes to view herself that way. And to see Calderwood beat her, it did go to the cards. It wasn't that exciting of a fight, really, but Calderwood was the better of the two by far, and I think two of the judges had it 30-27 across the board. So, you know, it was a really good card with really only the one dud, and it was a shame that was one that I had been looking forward to. But there's some great stuff. Like next month, Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns is going to be unreal at welterweight, right? Like that's going to be fireworks. So they've got some really good stuff. There's three pay-per-views in the next 2 months coming up. All of them look like they're worth a buy. Like, so the UFC, despite maybe having come off the high run that they had been on of stars all over the place, And you know, being that mainstream new kid on the block thing, it's maybe as deep now as I've ever seen it.
Right. And to me, that's the beauty of the sport is, and the curse of the sport, right? Which is you lose a bit of that name recognition.
Yeah.
But you have the depth like never before, right? When you have the rankings go 15 deep, right? And you have legit killers in the top 7 or 8 in all the divisions. Right. And so, well, at least from 145 up,
yeah,
or at least 145 through middleweight.
Well, even Miocic getting ready to go again. Like that's going to be against Francis Ngannou. I think that's the one in March, maybe the third of the cards that I'm talking about. Like there's some great stuff coming. And man,
and this is where I really miss the idea that because I'm not, there's not a pile of love for that here in this house. Right. So,
yeah.
When the lockdown and we all get this squared away, you and I can be watching these together, and as opposed to there's a pile of stuff going on.
Yep. The last thing I think we wanted to get to was this kind of weird back and forth that went on over the last few days about the Olympic Games, and there are those that'll tell you it's now been resolved. They've come out and spoken. I don't agree with that at all. Thomas Bach, the head of the IOC earlier this week, said, "We're moving ahead. There's no plan B. The Olympics will happen in Tokyo in July." And my favorite part of the quote was, "We can't see a reason why it wouldn't." And you're like, really? After that, the Times of London puts out an article that says they have sources that have told them that there are serious objections right now inside the Japanese government and people saying we need to find an honorable way out of this to just go, we can't do it. We're not going to run this. And how do we get our name kind of back at the top of the list for the next summer games that are available, which I believe is 34 or 32. I'd have to do the count and I'm not going to bother. And
yeah, well, do we know where 28 is?
I
it's Paris 24.
We must.
I'm not sure. Okay.
I don't, but it was definitely in the 30s that they were were looking to. Yeah, there you go. So, and I guess there's been tons of votes taken in the public. I don't know what it's worth to the IOC or to anybody else, but you know, anywhere from 70-80% of the population doesn't want it, and like they don't want people from around the world coming to their city this summer. It's a mess right now. I don't know what's going to happen. I think the IOC is always looking to just make their money and move on. The people of Japan and the Japanese government are the ones who are going to have to make the call here, and they have a bunch tied up in this as well. What's your read on the whole thing right now? Because it was a bit of a back and forth mess this week, and they moved fast to respond to that Times of London piece that I believe came out on Thursday night.
Yeah, well, you've touched on it. The first thing was Thomas Bach saying, we see no reasonable reason whatsoever, And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? But Japan's on fire with it right now. Yeah. And you're like, and they don't want it. And you go, if nothing else, for those younger listeners, up until 92, winter and summer games were held in the same year.
Yeah.
Right? In these extenuating circumstances, push it back to both in 2022. Like, that to me is the ultimate no-brainer.
There right? seems to be a thought that it can't be done. Like, they're saying it's now or never. I don't know why that is. Is it the World Cup in 22 that maybe is going to be TV contract problems? I don't know. Because I'm with you. Give it another year, and you'd think with the vaccination schedule looking like it's going to look, you'd think you'd be fine.
Yeah, well, how about this? If and that's a reasonable, you know, thought on your part, that the World Cup is a huge beast, and why have the two biggest sporting events happen at the same time? But why don't you then say, yeah, we are in really interesting times.
And
put the Olympics in. Yeah, they don't need to be in July then.
Yeah.
Put them in May.
Sure.
Like, bump it. You've already pushed it back 2 years. So what if you've sacrificed your late July, August? Like, hey, when it was in Australia, those games were held in October. Like, you're not married to this summertime July, August start.
Well, I'm shooting down my own point here. Isn't this Qatar coming up? Because those aren't happening in July, right? Didn't they decide we can't be doing July in Qatar? Maybe it's in October, November as well. And in which case, yeah. My whole point would
World
be
World Cup, eh?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great point.
So maybe my whole point is out the window there. But even just in terms of what NBC or whoever is willing to invest per year in major events, I don't know. But they're making it sound like it's now or these are just done.
Yeah. Well. And you are pimps. You can't be a pimp and a prostitute too, right? That's the thing. So the IOC is going to take ultimately what they're going to get. Like, they quoted the guy, I can't remember his name, Robert something or rather,
yeah.
who deals with NOCs, national organizing committees, right? And he's saying he's in close contact with 30 different NOCs.
Yeah.
And the idea that Canada had already said prior to last year, they were one of the first to say, yeah, we're not going.
Right.
We're not going. And this Robert Myers, whatever his name was, it's in the article. Matt will clarify for me. He's saying, yeah, there's a bunch of these NOCs aren't going to go, whether you host it or not. And so at some point, you were going to have to bow down to, in these trying times, To the NOC, to the national sporting organizations.
This whole thing that keeps making me crazy is the IOC saying, like, we understand this might have to be closed doors, right? We come and we do it on TV like so many other sports. And the 80% of Japanese people who've said that I don't want this then makes sense to me. Half of the fun, if we're going to have this expense, if we're going to have this craziness in our city, in a non-pandemic, the fun is that I get to go, right? Like, I'll go see some events. Now you're bringing all these people, possibly disease, you know, virus carrying, right, to my city for us to pay for, and we don't get to go. Why would I possibly be okay with that? Why would I spend taxpayer money on that? Why would I want the people from around the world, that countries, some have COVID under control, some don't, all showing up here, and they can say closed doors, hotels, and this and that, and what? You still have people in there having to work all these events, and then they come back out into the community. To me, the idea that it might be closed is a strike against, not a strike for. I'm not spending that kind of money on an Olympic Games and having the health, public health risk to it, and we don't even have the benefit of watching the games. Fuck it at that point, right? Like,
yeah. Well, and as you've said, they're going to, why would they want to pay for it and then actually have to pay for it physically,
yes,
after everybody leaves?
Right.
Like, it's a double whammy. No. It's the financial pay up front and then it's the health cost, yeah, post, right? And you're like, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
It's a no-go. So to me, you do you do 2022 or you're out, man. Because to me, I don't think there's going to be a lot of the nations who are going to want to support this.
I think you're right. And we've already seen the limited, you know, the couple times that it's been floated, and I think it was Thomas Bach and a couple other people. Well, maybe we just have to make sure the Olympians are vaccinated first. That's not going to fly either. Nobody's going to be okay with that. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think you find a way to push it to 22, or you just wave it off and go, yeah, it sucks. Sorry, it didn't happen this time. And, you know, we talked when this pandemic first started. I wonder if this is going to affect Tokyo 2020 at the time. And we both at the time said no, because the IOC, one way or another, gets their money, right? Like, yep. They get it done. And it got bad enough that even they had to go, all right, and shut it down.
Okay,
I think we can't be that far away from this being finalized one way or another, because you need to start calling off qualifiers and training tournaments and this and that, so that you can let people off the hook, right, for trying to host events here and there or trying to train. If this is going to get called off, that needs to happen soon.
Well, and where is Juan Antonio Samaranch when you need him?
Great name.
Right? He was the guy four years out of Athens in 2000. I was there in Sydney when he was there saying, these guys, Athens has a great possibility that they're going to fuck things up. That these guys are going to fuck things up. Can we host it here again in 4 years? Is that possible? So, yeah, the idea that you got to make moves when things arise.
Yeah.
You are sometimes forced to make change.
For sure.
Come on, Bach, get with it.
I think that's all we had for this one. I do want to remind.
And I'll be short, but I was on here last week and I said, fire DJ Smith.
Yes.
I think I'm a week further down the line where I'm saying, I don't ever, ever, ever need to see Michael Haley in my lineup. I do not need to see Artem Anisimov in this lineup.
White.
Yeah, I would hope to never see Cedric Paquette again, but I think I'm out of luck with that.
I still think there's a chance that's salvageable.
Cedric Paquette?
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it is five games in,
yes.
And it's got a bit of that, you know. I'm fine with this team not making the playoffs, but you've got to play young guys. And I know I was on the opposite side from you in terms of,
and
I'm okay with Stepan still, despite his two delay a game penalties twice in the third period in five games.
That's just unlucky. Hilarious, but unlucky.
Well, hey, get the putter out. Lose the wedge, man, whatever you're doing there, because you're putting it over the glass in the worst of times. But all I'm saying is, Coburn, I didn't think you were ever going to play here. Anisimov, I didn't think you would ever see any ice time, let alone in tie games or 3-on-3 overtime.
Yeah,
like
hilarious.
DJ and all those things in the Babcock vein of things, which is young guy, veteran, you know, in a tie, goes to the vet. I don't need to see that shit.
Not in a rebuild. I do not.
Yeah. So Willanen needs to be in all the time and White needs to be in all the time.
Yep.
Whatever you need to do to make that shit happen, that's got to go down now. I don't ever need to see those, you know, aforementioned guys again. And so it's been weighing on me, and I'm not concerned about making the playoffs, but if we're going to fucking lose, I need to lose with young guys who are learning. I don't need to hear you after a game say, well, we made young mistakes. You made fucking young mistakes with veterans in the lineup. Like, there was no young guys on the youngest guy was Shabbat.
Right.
Like, don't give me this. So I'm really, DJ Smith, you're on notice.
Oh, yeah. Love it. And we will, you know, we'll have time to get back into, you know, our local initiative, but the Sens fans for sure have been simmering this week or boiling over maybe a little bit on this front, that if this is a rebuild, if we're doing this thing, if we're going to have a bad year, give me a bad year where the young guys are learning something instead of, you know, as you mentioned, 3-on-3 Anisimov, which I was baffled by. Amused by, but baffled by.
You have 12 guys, 12 forwards, 6 combos. Anisimov needs to be that 6th pairing that you never need to see.
Right.
It never needs to get there.
The clock fell on the bench and we need a guy and he's the only one left. That's when Anisimov gets on the ice.
Yes. And just one more thing on that. And this whole idea that the Sens have gone bigger and they have gone tougher. And we're only 5 games in, 6 games in some situations. Have you seen any of this toughness develop anywhere? These have been the least tough games I think I have ever seen.
Yeah, I think that's par for maybe, I don't know if it's across the league, but it's certainly across the division. And I think I saw a bit of that in the bubble in the summer without the fans making you believe that I'm going to run full tilt into this guy and they're going to cheer and that's going to make me feel better. We're just 2 guys here in an empty building hurting ourselves is a harder thing to get amped up for. There's been some soft stuff in almost every game I've watched.
Yeah, and I get the Edmondson Myers fight right at the beginning of that Habs Vancouver game after the headshot on Joel Armia.
Yep.
I get that's hockey.
Sure.
That is eye for an eye kind of thing. But I don't need to see Michael Haley fight Nathan Beaulieu. I do not need to see that. Like, that to me is had zero impact on the game.
Irrelevant.
And now Michael Haley, God bless you, but you're taking up a fucking roster spot for the next 55 minutes. We don't need to see it.
It's true, man.
Okay, that's it. And I've got that off my chest.
Yeah.
End the show.
I get that. Don't forget, on Wednesday, you want to talk physicality. Kevin Mickey from Sportsnet will be here to help us tee up the Royal Rumble. I'm sure we'll talk a little UFC as well.
Demolition!
Yes, exactly. A little old school wrestling. One of the best parts of that UFC pay-per-view was Michael Chandler delivering that 1992 Ric Flair promo that, with a tear in my eye, this is the greatest moment of my life. It was gorgeous. Helwani was loving it. Everybody on Twitter had grabbed a hold of. He was clearly quoting that. So anyway, Kevin Mickey of Sportsnet will be here on Wednesday to talk a little bit about the Royal Rumble, always one of the biggest shows of the year. And next Wednesday, from TSN 1200, the guy who runs the show over there and for some reason who has looked the other way, who has signed off on his guys jumping on the shit show that is Tall Can Audio, John Rodenberg himself will be on the pod.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so he will join us a week from Wednesday. That's Super Bowl week. I'm sure that'll come up when he's here as well. So, and of course, Michaela back on Friday. And we will delve deeper into the Leafs and Sens again next Sunday night when Rob and I are back on here. We'll be another week deep, maybe slightly more information to be had on what these teams are at that point. So lots of great stuff coming up. This has been Tall Can Audio number 781. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. We will go ahead with it. As Rob mentioned off the top, we will get out of here tonight with the Twin Flames cover of the Tragically Hip's Grace 2. We will see you all next time.
See ya!
He said, I'm fabulously rich. Come on, let's go. She kind of bit her lip. Geez, I don't know. But I can guarantee there'll be no knock on the door. I'm a total. Come from downtown.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.
Appearance of force, but I can guarantee.